All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, May 7th, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Thursday. We've almost made it. Thursday's always a happy day. It, again, second day in a row, is 66 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It's supposed to get up near the 80s, so I'm pretty excited about that. Like I always say, at least spring has sprung. All my trees are in full bloom. We have flowers everywhere. So that always makes for a happy morning to wake up. So listen, yesterday we took a look at a lot of different things. And for the life of me, well, I do remember we looked at Tom Vilsack and the USDA, some of his comments in regards to the GMO, I think it was the GMO apple and the potato. That's what he talked about. Actually, it's always hard for me to remember. It's too early, guys. Only had a couple sips of coffee. But what I want to continue on today is kind of looking at what they are doing to our food and how companies such as Nestle are taking it upon themselves to nutritionally engineer our food for what they think is best for us. Some of us in chat actually signed up for a webinar from Nestle Research that has since been postponed. I mentioned that yesterday. It's now, I think, June 23rd. But I hit Nestle Labs website this morning and went into their research division. And there was a video on there that was kind of disturbing that I think we're going to take a look at as well. What I want to go back to, though, is a story that we started on 2 days ago. We read through the story about the Simplot potatoes and apples. I want to go back there because it was talking about this basic change that they made to the food using this double-stranded DNA, or RNA, sorry, dsRNA, to turn switches on and off, which is the RNA interference that we've talked about, that RNAi, and how even though most of the scientists are saying, well, it shouldn't make any difference, and an apple is an apple, a potato is a potato, so we rubber stamp them through the FDA and the USDA to go to market, which they just did, by the way, Vilsack approved them, that some of the research that was done on bees in just one feeding showed a massive change in the genes of the bees that had had just one taste of this modified food with this double-stranded RNA. So let me read that little section. And then there was a video at the bottom. We only made it through like the first minute and a half yesterday that I'd like to play to kick this off. So anyway, the title of this article, this was out of Institute for Responsible Technology, Why Scientists Are Worried About the GMO Potato and Apple. It starts out the question that serious scientists are asking: if we or bees or deer or birds consume this double-stranded RNA in the apple or the potato, can it influence how our genes work? And will these genetically modified organisms eaten as an apple pie, French fries, or whatever change our development, physiology, and behavior? And we found, digging into all kinds of different research, that even like the dog spit, like we were talking about a few weeks ago, I mean, having a dog and having your dog lick you, their bacteria can actually mingle with your bacteria. Their microbiome can mingle with your microbiome. Toxoplasmas in a cat can actually get into your body and make changes in your brain and the way your brain works. So, you know, this isn't pseudoscience anymore. This is real science that they're finding some proof that we definitely don't understand as much as we thought we did about how the body works. And there's a much larger ecosystem that is at work. And when you, I mean, it's like a perfectly balanced cart. And when you put a big grapefruit on the right side and not the other side, it starts to tip over. And I truly believe that that is a big part of what is going on with the collapse in our health and all of these chronic diseases that we're seeing now that they're deeming as, you know, Western diseases because of our bad eating habits. But these bad eating habits have been given to us by these food companies putting these poisons into our food. So anyway, someone like Nestle now decided, since all these scientists, by the way, that's something else we discovered, there is no central agency that is researching this stuff to make sure it's going to keep you and me safe. Each of these corporations, which of course are fueled by profits, and many of them who are protected from lawsuits or whatever for one reason or another, they are all doing their own research and deciding what is safe for you and me. And of course, the more lobbying dollars you have, the less risk you have in the future of having a lawsuit, right? Or, you know, we also look at plausible deniability. Who's going to blame it on the, oh, I don't know, peanut butter cup they ate 6 months ago that they're now sick? I mean, who knows? It could be anything. All right. So anyway, let's start reading this story. And then I want to hit the interview at the bottom that we started yesterday. This is a reminder, because this was like 2 days ago I read this. When Brazilian research scientists fed tiny pieces of RNA to young honeybees, they expected little to happen, certainly nothing earth-shaking. The RNA used is not naturally found in bees. It was taken from jellyfish. And remember, they're doing all kinds of mad science gone mad, chimeras and crazy shit. Who knows what they're putting in our food? This is why this is so concerning to me. I've always been extremely picky about my food, but I am even pickier now. And of course, they've deemed that now a mental disease, right? People who are suspicious about stuff in their food. Anyway, it was taken from a jellyfish chosen because it was supposed to have an insignificant impact. The RNA didn't cooperate. After mixing just a single meal of RNA into the natural diet of the worker bee larva, as the bees grew older, scientists discovered that a staggering 1,461 genes showed significant changes compared to the control group. In other words, about 10% of all the bees' genes, including those vital to health, were either turned up in volume or more often than not turned down. And again, let's point out that is that RNA interference to be able to turn down responses, flip off switches in the DNA through using RNA to make that change. The authors of the study concluded that such a massive change undoubtedly triggered changes in the bee's development, physiology, and behavior. Perhaps the scientists from the USDA missed this 2013 study when they recently approved potatoes and apples genetically engineered not to brown, Arctic apple slices, nicknamed, and we read this, Botox apples. Yeah, that'll make you hungry. Can supposedly sit on the shelf for 15 to 18 days without discoloring to reveal their age. And that is peeled and cut, by the way. Sliced up in 8 potatoes will similarly not show any darkening day after day until they dry up. To accomplish this effect, scientists at the Okanagan Specialty Fruit and J.R. Simplot introduced genetically engineered genes that make their apples and potatoes produce double-stranded RNA to shut off the browning genes. DSRNA is the same type of RNA that was fed to the bees. So this should be concerning to you that, like I said in the very beginning when we started talking about this, when they first announced these non-browning apples, they were spinning them as being great alternatives to get Johnny to eat his apples at school, because when he opened the baggie of his cut-up, sliced, peeled apple, it wasn't brown and it would be more palatable. But again, you're feeding your child something that has not been long-term tested, that looking at the study on the bees, that could be thousands of genes that are changed in your child's body that isn't going to show up for quite a long time in the future as having some sort of anomaly. And then how are you going to blame it on the apples? You know, Johnny starts growing a third arm out of his forehead. How do you know what that caused that? It could have been the vaccine. It could have been the pollution he was breathing. Who knows? So anyway, let me pull myself in here because I'm going to scroll down now so we don't run out of time like we do every day and see if we can play this interview. There's a doctor out of New Zealand. We actually made it down through this story. What was his name? It started with an H. Heinemann, something like that. Hold on, hold on. Heinemann, yes. One of those serious scientists is Dr. Jack Heinemann, a professor of genetics and molecular biology and the director of the Center for Integrated Research in Biosafety at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. For more than a decade, he has been warning agencies that approving GMOs could be dangerous, and they need a new test to test for double-stranded RNA safety. So, all right, we're going to listen to this interview. The lead guy from Responsible Technology comes on first, and then they interview Dr. Heinemann. So here we go. Hopefully this works today. Yes.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Smith from the Institute for Responsible Technology. The United States Department of Agriculture just approved a non-browning apple. Nicknamed the Botox apple, it hides its age because even if it's sliced and left out for close to 3 weeks, it won't turn brown. Similarly, a potato, engineered not to brown or bruise. Now, obviously, there's a concern that you may be tricked into eating a very old, possibly even rotten, apple or potato. But scientists around the world are concerned about something far more serious. The genes that produce the browning in the apple and the potato are silenced through something called double-stranded RNA. The engineers put in DNA into the apple's genome. It produces a double-stranded RNA, which then silences the gene that normally causes the apple or potato to brown. Now, what they're concerned about is that the double-stranded RNA produced in the apple and in the potato may silence our genes accidentally. A perfect example of this happened in an experiment on honeybees. Scientists took double-stranded RNA selected specifically not to have an effect. Unfortunately, they got it all wrong. They fed a single meal of double-stranded RNA to these honeybees, and 1,461 genes changed their levels of expression. That's about 10% of all the genes in the honeybee. Now, the author said this certainly changed the physiology, development, and behavior of the honeybees. And it was a complete surprise to the scientists. Are we going to be surprised by the effect of the double-stranded RNA found in the apple and in the potato?
Surprisingly, the form of RNA called double-stranded RNA is very, very stable, more stable than we think of for normal RNA molecules. And it's now been shown that they can be taken up after digestion of the food into our blood supply. We also know that other animals take up these double-stranded RNA molecules. And in fact, there are biotech companies who specifically engineer crops to produce double-stranded RNA molecules that are lethal to insects and crop pests. Until now, mostly the companies and the regulatory community have rejected the need to test these double-stranded RNA molecules based on the argument that they did not expect double-stranded RNA to survive digestion and be taken up in the blood system. Now that that assumption, which is never tested, has been challenged by peer-reviewed scientific evidence and has also been confirmed by two subsequent studies using other types of analysis, it's important that the regulatory community change its tune on this and demand that the companies demonstrate using experiments that the unintended or intended double-stranded RNA molecules made in genetically engineered organisms don't have an adverse effect on consumers.
In 2013, Dr. Jack Heinemann and others published a comprehensive paper describing how to evaluate the risks of double-stranded RNA so it's not a danger to us. Soon after, United States Department of Agriculture entomologists published their paper citing Heinemann's work and agreeing that the risks were severe and that the current assessments were incompetent to evaluate those risks and protect the environment and health. Tragically, the government regulators around the world ignore the risks. They even ignore the recommendations of their own scientists. The perfect example is found at the United States Food and Drug Administration. There, the scientists repeatedly warned that GMOs were different and dangerous, and could lead to allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. They urged their superiors to require long-term study. But the person in charge of policy, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, later Monsanto's vice president, and now back at the FDA as the U.S. food czar, his policy, he was in charge of, declared that the agency was not aware of any information showing that GMOs were different, a lie. And on the basis of that lie, no safety testing was necessary and no labeling was necessary.
Can you believe that? I mean, yes, I can believe that. But how did we allow that to happen? And then we find out Tom Vilsack, who's the head of the USDA, is also in bed with the biotech company. So, I mean, our food supply has been poisoned, number one. But number two, these people have not done any long-term testing. So, again, the FDA, the ones who allowed fraudulent studies to be published left and right, the ones who pointed to the rats that were fed glyphosate that ended up with the grapefruit-sized tumors that said that the study was bullshit are full of it, guys. Okay, anyone who points to a study and tells you that this stuff is safe and get on your tinfoil hat is absolutely wrong.
The policy came out in 1992, but we didn't know it was a lie for many years until the court ordered the FDA to reveal these secret documents.
1992, without your knowledge.
Millions of Americans are set to be exposed as early as 2016 when these things go to market. We don't know if the double-stranded RNA produced in these GMOs will match the sequence of our genes and change their levels of expression. It could be quite dangerous if it does. We don't want to be the guinea pigs. The Institute for Responsible Technology will not stand by and simply let this happen. Will you? Please sign our petition. Safe eating.
So there you go. I mean, don't listen to me. Listen to these scientists. I don't even know what to say. And I mean, it's to me, it's even more horrifying when somebody with actually some real scientific knowledge starts echoing exactly some of the things that we've been saying all along. And this is pretty frightening. And for anyone who has children, this should be a horror story. You know, and there are so many parents out there that just feed their kids anything. And think about all the things that apples and potatoes are in that we are exposed to on a daily basis. You know, that's why when you look at processed foods and things of that nature, I mean, not only do you know, do you not know the country of origin of anything that's going to be frozen and processed, but now we have to worry about crazy mad science gone mad inside of our food. And I mean, we already have to now, but what is the future going to look like? And yes, I see Anon 37001 talking about the TPP, and that's exactly it. I mean, they fought long and hard to make certain that we don't have our foods labeled. Sorry, I had to disconnect that. We don't have our foods labeled as to whether or not they contain GMO ingredients. And, you know, the companies that are using GMO have said, well, we don't want them labeled because then people aren't going to buy them. Well, look, if you were so proud of your GMO ingredients, wouldn't you be making that like your new tagline and spinning your propaganda to make people think that it's so wonderful and safe? So now let's take a look at Nestle. And I'm not just going to pick on Nestle. I mean, I am today because that's what I have in front of me. I'm sure that there are lots of other companies doing the same thing. When we looked at nanotech in our food, there was a list of all these different companies that were doing research and including it. And I mean, like I said, there is no FDA scrutiny. They're just rubber stamping all this crap because, you know, they're saying that it's chemically the same as the original ingredients and there's no danger to humans. But secondly, there is no long-term research on this, and every single one of these corporations are doing their own research. There is no central authority that is telling you that any of this is safe. Not that that would really make me feel any better. So when you go to Nestle, there is a section on their website called research.nestle.com. This is their nutritional research division. And whoops, this video is going to start playing auto, but I'm not hooked up yet. I want to read a little bit. So they have a whole section on nutritional research. They have all their own scientists that are working on all this stuff. And of course, they are so concerned about your health and how they can help make it better. So here, let's connect. We're going to hear what Nestle is doing to make sure that you're healthier in the future.
Nutrition and life science research provides the scientific basis to use the right nutrients in the right amounts so that Nestle can offer consumers products that fit their individual lifestyles and nutrition needs at any age. Based on consumer insights, Nestle science and research defined key health benefit areas. These include weight management, nurture, performance, beauty, natural, and protection. To give you a flavor of these health benefit areas, we will discuss three of them today. Your digestive system contains over 400 different types of bacteria that impart profound health effects. Probiotics are good bacteria which help balance the gut flora and reinforce immune defenses, promote digestive health, and offer many other health benefits. Nestle has studied probiotics for over 25 years and continues to identify and test the health benefits of probiotics. Food and nutrition have a major impact on performance. Studies in Nestle science and research range from the nutritional needs of children for growth and development to those of athletes in training and competition and of aging adults to maintain muscle mass and mobility. Performance is more than just physical performance. It is mental performance as well. Mental performance studies aim to help consumers optimize their cognitive ability and performance at school, work, and in daily life.
I mean, it's got to be pretty concerning to you that Nestle says that they've been doing research 25 years on probiotics and health and how Nestle foods affect our thinking abilities, our youth, our aged. Let me just read a little bit of this here on this page. So, I mean, are they saying that we're getting some sort of nutraceutical biopharma crap through our food that they've decided is good for us? Because I think that is what they're saying. Good food begins with good ingredients. And I mean, I'm not against that. I think we most certainly should be eating good ingredients. But from a large global corporation who's making decisions on what is good for you and me, that's got to be problematic. At least it is for me. It says, food ingredients or raw materials are the basis for all food products. These include natural ingredients such as milk, coffee beans, cocoa beans, wheat, rice, corn, water, fruits, and vegetables, to name a few. And the one thing I notice is that they don't mention in here anywhere that they're not using any type of milk with the growth hormone. And I don't see anywhere that they don't mention that they're not using GMOs. It says the best and most flavorful ingredients must be selected to make the highest food and beverage qualities. The nutrition that food provides comes from macro carbohydrates, protein, fat, and micronutrients, vitamins, and minerals. And these nutrients supply energy and support daily life functions such as thinking, moving, breathing, and all the other amazing things our bodies do without us even knowing. Yeah, but how frightening is that? In that we have these large corporations who are deciding what the best nutrients are to help us think, move, and breathe. Beyond macro and micronutrients, some ingredients may impart additional benefits for health. One such example is probiotics, quote, live non-pathogenic microorganisms, which when administered in adequate amounts may confer a health benefit to the host. We conduct clinical trials to understand how probiotics work in the body and how we can deliver these benefits to consumers through food and beverages. In addition to scientific study, the beneficial properties of ingredients, we also ensure that certain bioactive nutrients are available and well absorbed into the body. This is called bioavailability, and we also study which forms of nutrients are the most bioavailable for their use in fortification. Now, I mean, that's just a lot of scientific sounding mumbo jumbo, but basically they're deciding not only what is good for you, but they're using science behind them to figure out how to best get what they've decided is good for you into your body through the food you eat. And, you know, I remember reading a while back about chocolates at Halloween, how you should be very careful because a lot of that stuff is GMO. So who the hell even knows what they're putting into us? And there's one more section here called quality and safety. Oops, got to stop for a second. And let's listen to this, and then we're going to hop on to a little more detail.
Quality and safety science is the foundation of Nestle's success, helping to build consumer trust in products and services. Nestle continues to make a strong commitment and investment in quality and safety science. Quality and safety doesn't begin and end at factories. It begins at the farm and doesn't end until the food reaches your stomach. With outstanding scientific expertise, Nestle scientists evaluate all aspects of the food chain, from raw materials to finished products, to assure the products are nutritious, safe, and comply with local regulations. Quality and safety science works to not only preserve the natural nutrients in food, but also to identify and characterize undesirable substances like microorganisms, natural toxins, and contaminants. Nestle applies a comprehensive risk analysis approach developed by the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations to a...
I was muted. That should make you feel good. They're going along with the United Nations. The United Nations, who are recommending bug protein as a good source of protein. We're going to look at some of that, too.
Evaluate potential risks. This includes three scientific steps: risk assessment, risk management, and risk communication. A critical element in this process is the early warning system, which identifies emerging issues and potential risks. Every day, our worldwide scientific and technical network proactively monitors and evaluates for possible risks that may strike at any point of the food chain. If an issue is identified, we make sure that it does not affect Nestle products in any way. Risk assessment determines the level of concern toward potential threats from natural toxins and contaminants. The analytical methods from Nestle Science and Research are transferred to other Nestle R&D centers and operation units to continuously improve our worldwide risk assessment.
You know, it makes me feel so great eating Nestle products as I'm watching this video and it's some chick in a lab with a centrifuge and all these eyedroppers doing all this testing. And you notice nowhere in here, in any of these videos now that we've watched from them, have they mentioned non-GMO or being healthy or making certain that they're not poisoning us. And, yeah, I see someone mentioning carrageen. They do actually mention that in here somewhere. Hold on.
For example, the safety of fresh milk can be checked in less than 5 minutes, even before it leaves the farm. These tools, called rapid detection methods, can be used at every point of the production chain, from the farm to the milk collection point, and at the factory to prevent any possible contamination. These developed and validated methods are shared externally with local authorities, scientific organizations, and private and governmental labs. They serve as the international standards used to assess the quality and safety of agricultural materials and products. Keeping out undesired substances in food is one thing, but we also measure the components we want to keep in, vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients. We verify that the amounts of nutrients listed on the product label represent exactly what is in the product.
Ew.
2 years ago, this analysis may have taken 2 days or more, Today, rapid analysis methods give us a reliable assessment in only 30 seconds. Based on our early warning system and comprehensive scientific methods, over 500 people in Nestle laboratories around the world make over 200,000 business decisions every day to allow products leaving the factories. We continuously communicate with our partners around the world, internally with our quality and safety network, and externally in the public domain. Our aims? That consumers know we have taken every step from farm to fork to assure the quality and safety of all Nestle products.
Wow, I feel so warm and fuzzy. Yes, and someone brought up a great point in chat about Nestle and their water, where they've been illegally pumping water and selling it bottled out of California. Hold on. People are furious that Nestle is still bottling and selling California's water in the middle of the drought, and water is not a human right. Hold on. California has just entered its fourth year in record-breaking drought, and that has not stopped food and beverage giant Nestle from drawing water from multiple reserves in the state to make its bottled water, and people are furious. The company uses California water in its Arrowhead and Pure Life brands, which usually sell for about a dollar each. And in response, a group has drawn up a petition demanding that Nestle halt its operations in the state. The campaign is being run by Courage, a nonprofit organization based in California, and it's gathered 135,000 signatures going up at the end of March. Nestle gets to draw water from this area of the state thanks to its longstanding contract with the Morongo band of Chilo Mission Indians, who are based in a southern area of the state near the Coachella Valley, according to the Desert Sun, and the company's plant is based just inside the reservation. Regardless of where the plant is located, there are currently no laws on the books to regulate how much water can be taken from the underground aquifers. New regulations were recently introduced for this exact purpose, but they will not kick in for several years, which makes no sense to me. The only laws that exist now govern surface water, the kind that is in rivers and lakes. All water belongs to the people of the state, but if Nestle's drawing groundwater that is unregulated, the public information officer from the California State Water Resource Control Board, Tim Moran, told ABC News, that means Nestle, and anyone else for that matter, can draw as much water from the area's underground aquifers as it wants. How awful is that? Still, the amount pales compared to the amount that Governor Jerry Brown hopes to save, which is 5 billion gallons with water restrictions. In 2013, the most recent year for which Morongo submitted reports, nearly 600 acre feet of groundwater was tapped in the area, which translates to about 200 million gallons a year that Nestle is taking. That is enough water to supply the needs of around 400 homes in the Coachella Valley. You know, it makes you wonder, too, like, how can you just, we've talked about this before in regards to oil as well. I mean, even though you may have paid to tap it, what gives you the right to take a resource that is a natural resource and then make your profit from it, taking it away from the people who live near there? I mean, that just, to me, seems like such a bunch of fraud. Says the reason this particular plant is of special concern is precisely because water is so scarce in the basin. If you had the same bottling plant in a water-rich area, what, like the Great Lakes, where they're sucking the Great Lakes dry as well, selling it to China, then the amount of bottled water and diverted water would only be a small fraction of the total water available. But this is a desert ecosystem. Surface water in the desert is exceedingly rare and has a much higher environmental value than the same amount of water elsewhere. I'm just looking. I thought there was a video, but there isn't. So shame on Nestle. You know, there's another section on their website, too, that's titled Nutritional Health and Wellness. And I think so. No, wait, hold on. Maybe it was under Research and Innovation. science into business. There's one section here, Nestle Health Science or Institute of Health Sciences. I think that's what it is. Hold on. Because I think these are the people who were sponsoring this webinar that we were hoping to watch that has been now canceled due to unforeseen circumstances, quote unquote. But what's interesting is when you go out there, it pops a big box that says this section of our website is intended for physicians and medical students. And then you have to create yourself an account to be able to watch any of their videos on how they're manipulating your food. All right, I'm not going to pick on Nestle, though. So Nestle's all good, right? Well, you know what? At least have some education before you jump feet first and fall for any of the propaganda. Like I said, I didn't see anything about them talking about keeping GMOs or RBH, RGBH, whatever, the regulating growth hormone, Monsanto, out of their milk. And that concerns me. Only their scientists who are deciding what's good for you and your family. All right. So now I've been mentioning a story for a few weeks that I want to take a look at. And then we're going to hop into some bug protein. This one is out of Scientific American. Gut feelings, the second brain in our gastrointestinal systems, the superhighway between the brain and the GI system that holds great sway over humans, from May 1st, 2015. From the good gut, taking control of your weight, your mood, and your long-term health, by Justin Sonnenberg and Erica Sonnenberg, PhDs. A primal connection exists between our brain and our gut, and we often talk about a gut feeling when we meet someone for the first time. We're told to trust our gut instinct when we make a difficult decision, or that it's gut check time when faced with a situation that tests our nerve and our determination. This mind-gut connection is not just metaphorical. Our brain and gut are connected by an extensive network of neurons and a highway of chemicals and hormones that constantly provide feedback about how hungry we are, whether or not we're experiencing stress, or if we've ingested a disease-causing microbe. This information superhighway is called the brain-gut axis, and provides constant updates on the state of affairs at your two ends. That sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach after looking at your post-holiday credit card bill is a vivid example of the brain-gut connection at work. You're stressed out and your gut knows it immediately. Your enteric nervous system is often referred to as our body's second brain. There are hundreds of millions of neurons connecting the brain to the enteric nervous system, the part of the nervous system that is tasked with controlling our gastrointestinal system. This vast web of connections monitors the entire digestive tract from the esophagus to the anus. The enteric nervous system is so extensive that it can operate as an independent entity. That really surprised me. Can operate as an independent entity without input from our central nervous system, although they are in regular communication. While our second brain, quote unquote, cannot compose a symphony or paint a masterpiece the way the brain in our skull can, it does perform an important role in managing the workings of our inner tube. The network of neurons in the gut is as plentiful and as complex as the network of neurons in our spinal cord, which may seem overly complex just to keep track of digestion. Why is our gut the only organ in our body that needs its own brain? And that is a very good question. Is it just to manage the process of digestion? Or could it be that one job of our second brain is to listen in on the trillions, with a T, of microbes residing in the gut? You know, and that's what one of the things that's surprising and concerning. So we have trillions of microbes that are working in unison with the rest of our body. We have this whole second brain now that they've discovered in our gut, the enteric nervous system that is monitoring and orchestrating all of this. And we have corporations such as Nestle, and that's the one section that I can't even find the link now to that webinar. That's kind of what they're going to be dealing with, is how to utilize our microbiome, which is the study now of all these microbes in our body and how they interact, how to utilize our microbiome and manipulate it to, quote unquote, keep us healthy. That's actually one of the new biggest areas of research besides the Brain Project, by the way. All right, back to the story. Operations of the enteric nervous system are overseen by the brain and the central nervous system. The central nervous system is the communication with the gut via the sympathetic and parasympathetic branches of the autonomic nervous system, which is the involuntary arm of the nervous system that controls our heart rate, breathing, and digestion. The autonomic nervous system is tasked with the job of regulating speed at which food transits through the gut, the secretion of acids in our stomach, and the production of mucus in the intestinal lining. The hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or the HPA axis, is another mechanism by which the brain can communicate with the gut to help control digestion through the action of hormones. This circuitry of neurons, hormones, and chemical neurotransmitters not only sends messages to the brain about the status of our gut, but it also allows the brain to directly impact the gut environment. The rate at which food is being moved and how much mucus is lining the gut, both of which can be controlled by the central nervous system, have a direct impact on the environmental conditions the microbiota experiences. Like any ecosystem inhabited by competing species, the environment within the gut dictates which inhabitants thrive, and just as creatures adapt to a moist rainforest, who adapted to a moist rainforest would struggle in the desert, microbes rely on the mucus layer that will struggle in a gut where mucus is exceedingly sparse and thin. Bulk up the mucus, and the mucus-adapted microbes can stage a comeback. The nervous system, through its ability to affect gut transit time and mucus secretion, can help dictate which microbes inhabit the gut. And in this case, even the decisions are not conscious. It's mind over microbes. What about the microbial side? Well, when the microbiota adjusts to a change in diet or to a stress-induced decrease in the gut transit time, is the brain made aware of this modification, and does the brain-gut axis run in only one direction with all signals going from brain to gut, or are some signals going the other way? Is that voice in your head that is asking for a snack coming from your mind, or is it emanating from the insatiable masses in your bowels? Well, recent evidence indicates that not only is our brain aware of our gut microbes, but these bacteria can actually influence our perception of the world and alter our behavior. Now, we had actually looked at some of that in regards to the fecal transplants. We had talked about that, probably a month or two ago, where some people end up with this disorder after taking antibiotics, and antibiotics, most certainly they've discovered, messes up your gut flora because it kills not only the bad gut flora but the good gut flora. And some people have a real tough time recovering from certain antibiotics. The gut flora stays out of whack, and they have this terminal digestive problem that causes them to have terminal diarrhea, for lack of a better way of explaining it. But they have a treatment for that now, and that is called a fecal transplant. And one of the things that we had kind of postulated on when we were reading the stories about dogs and being able to transfer their microbiota to humans and how that actually changes your personality, that if you've got a fecal transplant, which is actually, they have donors, which is really gross to think about, but there are donors for this. And when they transplant this fecal transplant to help reorganize your gut flora, let's say, can that influence your personality? And I mean, in looking at the research, I'm going to almost say, yeah, there's quite a potential there that your personality could change. Actually, let's do a quick search on microbiome and personality. The mind-body microbial continuum. That's actually a story out of the National Institute of Health, or the E. coli made me do it. There was a big story not too long ago about the microbiome, anxiety, and depression as well. mental health may depend upon your microbiome and the creatures in your gut. I mean, this isn't any joke. There definitely is a lot going on that we really have not been aware of for most of human creation that now science is tapping into, and most of the American public is blindly believing that, you know, these corporations have your best interest at heart, and any mumbo jumbo that they're going to be dumping on you is going to be good for your health. But that is not the truth. Here, mental health may depend upon creatures in your gut. This was another one out of Scientific American. The ongoing exploration of the human microbiome promises to bring the link between the gut and brain into clearer focus. Scientists are increasingly convinced that the vast assemblage of microfauna in our intestines may have a major impact on our state of mind. The gut-brain axis seems to be bidirectional, which is a question they were just asking in the last article. The brain acts on gastrointestinal and immune functions that help shape the gut's microbial makeup, and the gut microbes make neuroactive compounds, including neurotransmitters and metabolites, that also act on the brain. These interactions could occur in various ways. Microbial compounds communicate via the vagus nerve. We talked about that a couple times, which connects the brain and the digestive tract. And microbially derived metabolites interact with the immune system, which maintains its own communication with the brain. So, you know, when we look at all of the different connecting points that we've discussed here, GMO foods and how GMO foods, glyphosate in particular, is a great antimicrobial per Dr. Huber. Antimicrobial, and then it kills microbes, kills them in the soil, kills them in your gut. So GMO foods right off the bat are part of the cause of us not having proper microbiota. And also we found that it chelates out nutritional minerals and vitamins that we're not properly absorbing, which they've discovered through watching in animals, plants, and soil. You know, we look at some of the different research that's being done on immunology and vaccinations and manipulating our immune system. That's all related to these interacting ecosystems in our body. And like I said, it's like a well-balanced cart. And once you put the big fat watermelon on the one side, it's going to disrupt the other side. So we look at all these diseases now. And of course, disease makes for lots of money for biopharma. And we look at all these diseases and we start looking at environmental causes and things that are going into our body. And then all the diseases that have come from that. I mean, it really behooves me that they can go pointing to our lack of nutrition, our lack of being able to take care of ourselves as reasons for why the public is so ill. But it's actually them that have been causing all of this without any proper research. They're all doing their own mad science gone mad studies and saying it's safe and then feeding it to your children. And, you know, here, I want to find one thing, and then I don't know, we're going to have a few minutes here, but I have a good video, but let me find one thing before I forget it. Hold on. Food and mental disorder. Yeah. What was that new one? No, not anorexia. Hold on. I don't even remember what they called it. Oh, eating healthy is a mental disorder. Yes, that's what it was. That was in February. And I bet you this isn't even going to come up. Oh, it is. Look at it. So in the middle of all this concern that we're having as we're looking at some of the things that we see happening and the government is rubber stamping everything because everybody is fondling each other in their back pockets, we now find that there's a new mental disorder that has to do with people who are concerned about eating healthy and the poisons that they're putting into our food. These days, it seems that everyone has one of those friends who brings their own organic, gluten-free, vegan health food alternatives to the family barbecue. However, psychiatrists have started diagnosing those who eat an abundance of healthy foods as mentally ill. Now, here's, oh my God, this actually makes me start to get really crazy when I think about this, because it's the food. It's the food that they're feeding us that's making us sick. It's all the chemicals and the manipulations since the 90s that have been slipped into our food without our knowledge, and we've been experimented upon, that's now equaled all of these horrifying diseases, the leaky gut syndrome, the autoimmune diseases, the cancers, the obesity. It's all what they've been putting in our food. But there's no way. Remember, plausible deniability. Nobody's going to say that it was their food. So it must be you, crazy person who thinks you want to eat healthy and think that they're all out to get you with the poison food. But it's true. It's all true. And then they point to their fraudulent FDA paid for studies showing that you're crazy. It's no secret that Americans are obsessed with food and nutrition, but as more people find new ways to incorporate health foods into their diet, some are forming an unhealthy obsession with health food diet fads. Some are even developing anxiety over which foods are considered quote-unquote safe to eat. I mean, I would have to say it's a healthy anxiety from this point. Much like OCD, the obsession with raw, natural, non-GMO food can become a compulsion that deprives people of mental stability and nutrients. I mean, I can't even. This is making me dizzy. It's making me so mad. Oh, this particular eating disorder is called orthorexia nervosa by psychiatrists and is associated with a pathological obsession with health foods to the point where such a diet is disruptive to a so-called normal lifestyle. Some may even develop a fear of food, such as vegan food blogger Jordan Younger, who became sick, stopped having her period, and suffered from panic attacks while in the grocery store. Dr. Tim Walsh, who was part of the DSM-5 work group, of course, says that it was partially due to timing that they've now included this in the new manual, as there was not enough published works on the disorder. Other objections. Oh, so they didn't add it? As of now, it is not yet classified, in the AMA's DSM-5. It says other objections to adding orthorexia to the DSM include the vilifying of health foods by the food industry as a way of maintaining the relevancy of the profits first, people second profit motive. As consumers buy more health foods and walk away from processed foods, the food industry retaliates. They maintain that the food industry bankrolls the pharmaceutical industry, who can pressure psychiatrists to diagnose with orthorexia. This allows them to continually prescribe expensive and harmful drugs for the treatment of this continuous cycle. And that's what we've said. And absolutely, that's what they're doing. Very last thing, if you weren't afraid of food yet, I think you should be afraid of food now. So we have looked at, as we're having food shortages globally, the UN has come out many times talking about, how cows contribute to the carbon footprint. And of course, Bill Gates, how we need to reduce carbon to zero. So a good way to do that is with insect protein. Get rid of the cows.
Time. Are you ready? Wait, can you see the little cricket? It's still moving. Can you see? It's happy. Come on. One, two, three.
Say it. Not everyone's prepared to eat an insect, but here we are at Paris's Science Museum, and this stand has attracted a lot of attention. It's teeming with crunchy little creatures.
It's weird when you eat it, when you bite into it. There's this strange liquid that comes out. It's quite crunchy, then it gets a bit juicy. Yeah, that's right.
Ow! Oh, God. Juicy and crunchy. Just what I want in my buggy moving food. But the reason why I brought that up is because many, many times we have talked about the day that the replicator comes, and I've postulated many times that, wow, insect protein in a replicator would be like the best way to trick us into it. And now we have these 3D printers that they've been messing with, making all this gourmet food. And one of the things that I talked about is this newfangled, you know, make one quick cup of coffee, how that to me almost look like generation one replicator. Well, here we go, guys. This video came out just the other day. Star Trek style replicator food serves up meals in 30 seconds. And oh my God, it came from Israel. Here we go, guys.
It's a revolution in culinary technology. With the press of a button on your phone, the genie becomes your personal chef, mixing, shaking, and baking a healthy meal in just 30 seconds. Developed by Israeli entrepreneurs at White Innovation, the device uses tiny pods to create meals, similar to those that contain coffee for espresso machines. White Innovation CEO, Ayelet Carasso.
The dish can be anything. It can be a meal, like chicken with rice, or like couscous with vegetable, or an amazing ramen, or even a chocolate souffle or any other dessert that you want. And it's healthy because we're using only natural ingredients. We're not using any preservative or anything that you had people add to their meals.
The all-natural ingredients in the pods are freeze-dried.
And just remember, all natural ingredients can include things such as beaver anal gland.
And have a shelf life of 1 to 2 years. Israeli chefs have already begun producing new recipes for Genie's pods and plan to add more for those with diets that are sugar-free or gluten-free. Doron Marco, White Innovation's head of technology, says the system was inspired by Star Trek's replicator, a device that synthesized food on the legendary Starship Enterprise. While Genie is of this galaxy, the system is being refined so that in the future it will be able to anticipate an individual's dietary needs.
Eventually, Genie will know your microbiome and will prepare the pod for you, just for you.
And did you hear that? Genie will know your microbiome and prepare food just for you.
You will eat better, even tastier, and healthier.
At a recent taste test at a cafe in Israel's Ramat HaSharon, kitchen staff gave Genie's culinary skills 2 thumbs up after sampling a chocolate souffle.
It's really nice. It's chocolatey, it's smooth, it's creamy, it's nice.
And it's probably made with crickets. All right, guys, it's time to go. That went really fast. All right, make sure you stick around tonight. It is Thursday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next live. Chuck O'Chelly at 6, Behind the Woodshed at 8 p.m. Eastern. Double Cross with Drew and Chuck at 10, and at 11, Anti-Media with S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Thursday. We will catch up with you tomorrow. Everyone take care.